Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Thursday, March 30th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hello, Melody. And
hello.
It sounds like you're in need of celebrating Happy National Doctor's Day.
No, just Allergy Day.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, well, me too. Yeah. Well, every year.
Yeah, it happens. It does happen. Well, anyway, it's National Doctor's Day. How about that? I'm sure we all know one, a stalwart of who save or extend our lives as we live each and every day to the fullest. I'm sure that Ronald and Nancy Reagan and the nation as a whole were thankful for the doctors that saved the president's life this day in 1981, 40 some years ago. Wow. As Reagan was leaving a speech he had just given to labor leaders at the Washington Hilton, he was shot in the chest by assailant John Hinckley Jr. Who among us can forget the president being whisked away by his Secret Service agents as his press secretary lay bleeding on the sidewalk? An interesting personal note, Melody. A few hours before the attempted assassination, I happened to catch an egg sandwich from the Greasy Spoon restaurant right across the street from where this action took place.
You did?
What a coincidence. Yeah, I believe
it. Were you there?
Not when it happened, about an hour and a half before his
wow.
speech. I believe it was called the Florida Avenue Grill, where I stopped by for a quick breakfast on my way to a job interview in the neighborhood. Anyway, it was a chilling moment to watch those events unfold on TV where I had stood that same morning. Anyway, doctors, thanks for your commitment to taking care of us, especially in light of all this pandemic craziness of the past few years.
Did you get the job?
In fact, I did not.
Oh, no.
It was one of many rejections I was fielding in those early days of my would-be career.
Well, let's go ahead and let's see what gold's career was today. Not bad, up $17. New York spot price after market, $1,982.60. Silver's up 55 cents today at 23.99. Platinum was up 18 at 996. And palladium was up $22 1,552. The USDX today, of course, was lower, 0.50. Not a whole lot for to see such a nice move in gold, 102.15. Crude oil was up $1.36 at 74.33. Paper markets today, the stocks closed higher, and the Dow jumped more than 100 points, 32,859. S&P, 23 points. NASDAQ, 87 points, 12,013. European markets were all positive. Asian markets pretty much mixed. The Nikkei was lower. 10-year yield, 3.55 on the 10-year. And natural gas went up, and now it's back down, 2.112, down 3, a little over 3%. So it's kind of a strange day, you know. Everybody thinks that the banking crisis is at least stabilized. I don't hear very many people talking about that it's over, but perhaps it's been stabilized, of course, with funny money coming from the government and from the Federal Reserve and who knows where else. But I still think it's there in everyone's mind that we got a long way to go before we see any of this finish out. So let's go ahead and let's get started today. Here's a couple of news stories to get us started today. And after years of wrangling, the world's most important oil price is about to be transformed for good. It will allow crude supplies from West Texas to help determine the price of millions of barrels a day of petroleum transactions. Now, this shift is because of the existing benchmark. Dated Brent is slowly running out of tradable oil for it to remain reliable. It's not really running out of oil, I would think, per se, Dave. It's just, it's still there, right?
You got me speechless, because I read this story and I didn't follow up on that particular comment. I don't know what they mean by slowly running out. If it's below a certain level, or what, but or if it's more empty than full, I don't know. I gotta believe. I mean, that's such a vast.
Yeah. We've got tons of it.
Yeah.
But what's interesting though is they're trying to shift the price of oil, how it's priced, right?
Yep.
So I'm going to go a little bit deeper. And is it going to be priced to the point where it's lower to push these oil companies deeper into debt to where they can't manage, or will it be higher to push people into, because we all know this administration is pushing for the electric vehicles. So it'd be interesting to see. And this point too is interesting, Dave, where I think is really interesting is how does it change from the Saudis pricing oil anymore? Has that been broken now?
I have a feeling that recent talk of the Saudis moving away from the dollar to price oil, this could have pushed. I mean, I suspect that a move like this has been talked about for some time behind the scenes by domestic industry. And perhaps I'm just guessing that, you know, the recent talk of the Saudi Arabia and a couple of other OPEC plus nations thinking about, finding an alternative to the dollar could have pushed this move. We'll have to look into it more and see what some of the potential impacts could be.
I could see some really interesting things coming out of this.
Well, you know, it all depends. I mean, just like the change of pricing of so many financial instruments based on LIBOR to various newer benchmarks, it hasn't had the kind of profound impact that some were predicting 2-3 years ago. So we'll just have to follow it and see what oil and domestic oil particularly ends up trending in the the next several months.
You know, it's interesting that you brought up LIBOR, because you're right. You know, we don't hear much about the changeover in the pricing and everything, but look at what's happened in the past couple years. So did it really have, maybe, you know, this is all being flushed out maybe because of those changes, but, you know, we don't ever hear anybody talk about it. So I appreciate you bringing that up, because it makes me wonder, you know, how long ago were they, you know, the overnight bailout started back in 2019, yeah. And a lot of that debt had to be rewritten. And now we're looking at higher rates that these companies and so forth had to pay. So it's, you really wonder what goes on behind the scenes. And it's very difficult to find that information, because we're just not privy to it. And it's a big secret, but it makes me wonder that it might have had a bigger impact than what we truly realize.
Money matters.
Yeah.
I mean, just ask the Bank of Japan. Governor Hirohiko Kuroda changed the course of global markets when he unleashed that $3.5 trillion Japanese cash on the investment world. Now Kazuo Ueda is likely to dismantle Kuroda's legacy and setting the stage for a flow reversal that risks sending shockwaves again through the global economy, perhaps in the other direction. Just over a week before a huge leadership change at the Bank of Japan, investors are gearing up for the seemingly inevitable end to a decade of ultra-low interest rates that punished domestic savers and sent a wall of money overseas. That mountain of offshore investments, worth more than 2/3 of Japan's economy, risks unraveling under this new governor, Ueda. Now, he may have little choice but to end the world's boldest easy money experiment, just as the rising interest rates elsewhere are already jolting the international banking system. Add to that a little instability here, there. Things are that's about ready to, salt shaker, pepper shaker. It's gonna be interesting out there what that does to the markets.
Well, I've been talking about Japan for a little bit now, and I think that's one of the. I saw a chart today where you have all the United States, all the European Union, and so forth. Australia, they've all raised their rates. You know, in a combined number, it's huge. And then Japan was listed as the very last, and they're still negative. They're still negative interest rates. So it's, you know, look what's happened to the rest of the world when they started raising rates. I can't even imagine what's going to happen when they do that. And they can't just keep doing this ultra easy money. It's just, they can't stay in negative territory forever. So I think this is could possibly be not the black swan, but one of the black swans. Then there's the FDIC day. The largest U.S. bank could face big bills as the FDIC corporation stares at almost $23 billion in costs from recent bank failures. The FDIC is reportedly considering steering a larger than usual portion of that burden their way. And they're planning to propose special assessments on the industry in May to shore up a $128 billion deposit insurance fund that's set to take a big hit after the recent collapse of those two banks, the Silicon Valley and the Signature banks. I mean, we all know they couldn't cover everything. So behind the scenes, officials are looking to limit the strain on smaller community lenders. They're shifting an outsized portion of the expense just towards much larger institutions. I can't imagine these much larger institutions just sitting by and saying, yeah, We're here to help. You know, so anyway, that's kind of interesting. And, you know, these multi-billion dollar tabs for the too big to fail banks, like the Morgan Chase, BOA, and Wells Fargo. Dave.
Yeah, well, I guess that's why they're too big to fail.
Yeah, I guess. Right. Yeah, I guess so. And then
go ahead.
And also in the months before the crisis that was triggered by the Silicon Valley Bank's failure, we saw these lenders, they were already beginning to tighten their standards. We saw that the, you know, still the economy remains fairly resilient, it seems. That's what we're told anyway. Solid growth, I'd argue about that. Booming job market. Well, yeah, people working a couple jobs to keep it going, but yet there's so many open positions available.
And two-thirds of us still living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Extra cash sloshing around the economy, a legacy of pandemic-era stimulus, and high savings rates could have helped blunt spillover from tighter lending standards. Now, this huge risk may not be repeated as a stockpile buildup over the pandemic as it runs down. This sets up the possibility of a dwindling cushion as banks pull back on lending in the wake of the SVB collapse. TD Securities said excess cash has allowed economic activity to be funded from alternative sources of liquidity over the last couple of years. And again, these are just temporary covers up that they do. They add, you know, they throw money in there to keep it going, Dave.
Well, yeah, remember the Fed balance sheet soared to almost $9 trillion. Last April, before they started their tightening, they're you know, among them, and we learned after the pandemic had started that you know, there were at least a handful of programs that we knew about. There were programs we learned years after the Great Recession of how the Fed secretly bailed out the big boys. So. You know, I don't want to say it's laughable, because it's certainly not a laughing situation for the depositors anyway that are being affected. But you know, before this string of failures earlier this month, one had a squint to see the impact of the tightening of interest rates intended to chill the economy. I mean, businesses were still hiring, consumer demand still strong, and prices obviously continued to rise quickly. And fallout from SVB has further tightened these conditions, though Fed Chair Jerome Powell noted earlier this month that traditional indexes that measure financial conditions don't take bank lending into account. That's interesting. That means that overall tightening may be more severe than the numbers actually suggest, with possibly a bigger blow to economic activity to follow. I wonder if Powell purposely alluded to that melody just to, I don't know, set expectations a little bit more realistic for a hard landing, even though, you know, they're trying to avoid that at all costs. Well, whatever the case, in a new analysis of historical credit tightening, two guys from Employ America, Preston Mui, and Alex Williams, found the risks are particularly acute for the commercial real estate sector and smaller businesses. In short, they're saying employment related to commercial real estate and small business is already under stress from post-pandemic dynamics, adding that these are also parts of the labor market that would suffer disproportionately from a pullback in lending from small and regional banks. So, sort of like, yikes.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm not a fan of Janet Yellen, and I don't even know why she's in the position that she's in. But she gave a wide-ranging speech on financial stability today and warning about the risk in the banking system and beyond. And I don't know. It's I just can't take her very seriously.
But the Volcker Award. I wonder if that has a cigar on.
Maybe. Who knows? But what I do know is I hear music, Dave, and I think we're heading into a break. So we will be returning. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you, never gonna give you up.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, believe it or not. I might not sound the same, but I am. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. You know, heading in the break, we were talking about Janet Yellen, and she argued that when the financial system works, it can be a powerful engine for economic growth. But that a fragile financial system can generate deep pain for American households when it fails. And, of course, she's referencing the risks to the banking system after the bank failures. And it's like, yeah, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. You know, when the financial system works, it's that 1% that gets wealthier, wealthier, and wealthier. But then when it breaks, it's the American household that feels the pain. And but that's the way it always works, and that's not going to change. Real quick, Dave, jobless claims. Yoo-hoo! Jobless claims for the week ended March 25, totaled 198, up 7,000 from the previous week. Everybody was expecting 195,000. So 198,000 for the week ending March 25th. So it was a little bit higher than what everybody had anticipated. And, you know, I don't think there's anything. Would you like to add something to that, Dave?
No. Well, the only thing, just more speculation about future losses of employment, particularly pointing to the Fed and the dot plot, the latest, their latest dot plot, expecting headline unemployment to rise from 3.6% to 4.5%. What they actually mean, they don't actually mean this, but these are the actual or more realistic numbers, that instead of 3.6, it's really 6.8%. Percent, which means 4.5 would be closer to 8.5% unemployment. Nowhere close to full or maximum employment as one of the Fed's mandates are. And that's the difference between the components of the unemployment rate. It's not just the Fed. It's virtually every official, government official, elected and otherwise uses, but hey, it is what it is. We'll just continue to try and, you know, keep them honest. So there you have it.
All right. Well, everybody likes music, and we're going to take a little bit of a different break here. And you have a Levity is Golden today about the music and our brain.
Yeah, how about that? You know, as we go in and out of breaks on uplifting music, you know, we've all heard about the total body workouts, but medical experts are saying it's also possible to get a total brain workout. And one of the quickest and most fun ways to do it, they say, is by throwing on your favorite tunes. Listening to music stimulates multiple parts of your brain, and research has it linked to reduced anxiety and physical pain, as well as boosted mood and memory. It's according to Johns Hopkins Medicine Journal. It's one of the most effective tools we've got to keep our brains young, in fact, and it can even revive old memories in dementia patients. Music can take you back in time, as well as act like a jolt of electricity that can fire up your brain and get it going. So says Andrew Butson, the chief of cognitive and behavioral neurology at the VA Boston healthcare system. Case in point, consider these two interesting examples of the healing power of music. First, stroke survivors who've lost the ability to speak can, in some cases, learn how to sing using music therapy and then translate those skills to speaking. And then two, Parkinson's patients can use dance to improve their balance and gait speed. Bottom line, revel in the joy of song and dance. It's good for us. So whether you like your music under the cover of headphones or by simply asking Alexa to play your favorite artist's set list, get listening, do a little dance, and get down tonight. That melody is this week's Levity is Golden.
I guess it helps if I turn my mic up. Thanks, Dave. We appreciate it very much. I love music, and it really does change your – many times it'll change your mood, and it's good.
No, wait, you meant to say – I love music.
Well, not
sweet,
quite.
Sweet music.
There you go, Dave. Well, now we have to go back to something that's going to upset people. Egg producers, their profits are way up in the United States. Their revenue doubled. Their profits surged 718% last quarter. And, of course, that's due to higher egg prices. The company, Cal-Maine Foods, which is the largest egg producer in the U.S., controls about 20% of the U.S. egg market. And it said its average selling price for a dozen eggs in the quarter ending February 25th was $3.30, more than double the average of $1.61 a year earlier. Despite the higher prices, the total number of eggs it sold edged up 1%, so its overall revenue rose 109%. That doubling of revenue was nothing compared to its profits, however. Net income soared to $323 million from only $39 million a year ago.
Wow.
The jump in revenue and profit had been expected but easily blew away forecasts. Of course, we've seen with this deadly and highly infectious avian flu, certainly has forced the killing of millions and millions of egg-laying hens. And, of course, that affected the country's egg supply that drove up prices, Dave.
Well, the Calmaine said in its earnings statement that there had been no positive tests for avian flu at any of its production facilities. So they can't fall back on that excuse, if you will, for the reason for a 718% increase in profit. That's nuts. Egg producers' pricing decisions have been criticized by some elected people who accuse them of profiteering and price gouging. Melody just mentioned seem to confirm that charge. But American families are working to put food on the table, deserve to know whether the increased prices they're paying for eggs represent a legitimate response to reduced supply or out of control corporate greed. That was a passage from a letter sent to egg producers by a couple of senators and congresspeople last month. Egg prices did start to retreat slightly in the government's most recent inflation report for February, but are still up more than 55% from a year ago.
Wow. And, you know, I just saw a headline. I didn't have a chance to pull it up. Sugar. Sugar's going to be another hot commodity, as we've seen the cost of sugar is going to spark further prices, rises in all of our foods, because pretty much everything we eat has sugar in it. So lower prices aren't coming around anytime soon. Office vacancies, delinquencies, they're rising. You know, what is the potential bust in the $6 trillion U.S. office property market?
Wow.
What's that going to look like? $6 trillion. A deep downturn in property values is more than a problem for oligarchs, feuding billionaire clans, and, hey, throw in a few oil-rich foreign investors. It could touch everyone, too, by hurting pension fund performance and city tax revenues. If it gets bad enough, it could even undermine more banks, crimp lending, and again, just something else to slow down the economy. Office utilization is still low compared to the before times, with work from home and hybrids setups now standard for millions of former office drones. Nearly 30% of companies still have remote or hybrid options. This is what the latest census data shows. Office building appraisal values were down 25% in February compared to a year earlier. Signs of stress are picking up, with delinquencies on commercial office mortgages touching 2.4% in February, and that's up, 1.5% 6 months ago. The value of commercial property produces anywhere between 20 and 40% of tax revenues for state and localities. That's huge.
Yeah, it is huge. And if those revenues fall, those local governments will have to cut services, raise taxes, or both, making cities even more, well, here's an oxymoron, more less attractive, lesser attractive. Meanwhile, smaller banks are big lenders to real estate developers, putting them at risk if office defaults spike. Analysts at Too Big to Fail Goldman Sachs estimate that banks hold roughly half of the nearly $6 trillion in commercial property mortgages, with the overwhelming majority of that half held at small banks. And many of those same regional community banks have been under pressure since SVB failed a couple weeks ago. And with deposits moving to larger institutions or simply to higher interest accounts like money market accounts, where they're earning between 4 and 5%, as opposed to, you know, close to a third to a half a percent in the banks, they'll have less capacity to refinance loans on office properties. Property loans typically need to be refinanced every 5 to 7 years. And failure to refinance or pay off the loan can result in, a default. When that happens, the debt gets renegotiated, and the lender often takes losses. So if defaults start to pile up, it could worsen the pressure on office building values and make banks leerier of making office loans. And that's just going to make everything, defaults and bank losses, worse. And not to mention pension funds, employee pension funds have also sunk billions into commercial real estate in recent years. The top 200 institutional managers owned about $500 billion worth of real estate last year. That's according to the publication Pension and Investments. Bottom line, Melody, we're still in the early stages of this post-pandemic era for offices, and how it will shake out is the trillion, or I should say the $6 trillion question.
It's a lot of trillions. You know, we all know that Credit Suisse was taken over by UBS. And, you know, it could bring, you know, some more fresh set of regulatory and legal problems for the new owner. And for years, the bank has provided a, you know, we all know this. I mean, they've been doing it for, you know, how long? Hundreds of years. Well, maybe not hundreds, but decades, for wealthy American clients to hide assets from the IRS. The bank notoriously pleaded guilty in 2014 to criminal charges for knowingly and willfully helping thousands of U.S. clients conceal their offshore assets and income from the IRS. Now they just went to the Cayman Islands. But, hey.
Well, a long line of questionable practices. Didn't we read that they helped former Nazi, fleeing Nazis, hide their banks as they fled Germany after World War II? It goes back a long way.
Yeah, it certainly does. Certainly does. And so the Swiss National Bank, the country's central bank, injected more than $100 billion of liquidity into Credit Suisse just to keep it afloat earlier this month. At the same time, the Swiss government agreed to provide UBS with $9 billion to backstop losses from resulting from the takeover. Senate investigators say the new revelations raise questions about just how much American money remains hidden inside the vaults of a bank whose collapse rattled the foundation of the global banking system.
Dave. Well, yeah, it's unclear how much potential liability UBS is exposed to as a result of this report. But a lawyer for the whistleblowers that are involved argues the bank should pay as much as $1.3 billion. I don't know if that's Swiss or U.S., but it's still big bucks. Senate investigators say they discovered that Credit Suisse enabled as many as 25 American families to hide their fortunes, totaling more than $700 million in years after Credit Suisse had previously entered into this plea agreement. Although the bank did disclose and close many American accounts after the 2014 plea, some of its bankers worked with high net worth clients to keep certain Americans at the bank by, listen to this, changing the nationalities listed on their accounts and ignoring evidence that the account holders were Americans. In other cases, they helped American clients move money to other banks without reporting those transfers to U.S. authorities. It's according to the whistleblowers. One investigator said, don't ask, don't tell is maybe a good explanation for what happened. They would have clients that are Americans, but they would switch their passports around to show and flag as if they were not. So now we know, we've known forever that secrecy drives the entire Swiss banking industry. And the first whistleblower said to point that the sector may not be able to survive without the secrecy. Swiss banks are much more expensive, and there's a reason for that, he said. If you could choose anywhere in the world you'd want to be, why would you pay more? Why'd you be in a place that underperforms in terms of your return on assets? If a client isn't hiding assets in Switzerland, he said, there's no reason to be there.
That is very, very true. But, you know, it's just funny. I mean, it's not like it's a big secret or anything like that, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And So let's go on. Let's see, how much time do we have? Well, we don't have much time at all. We do? No, we don't. I hear the music. We'll be back.
Saved by the Bell.
Saved by, you're right, because I want to do that. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Well, I'm standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona. It's such a fine sight to see. It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me. Come on, baby, don't say me.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, this beautiful, chilly Thursday. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients. This final segment, you know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Now, I know that listeners are used to long-winded solo commentaries from me most days, so today, let's do something a little differently. Instead of, you know, two, three long stories, let's talk about six, seven, or even eight shorter ones. First up, more than one analyst has said that the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank was about ESG, the now controversial moniker for environmental, social, and governance measures. Just not the way in which critics have portrayed it. Axios's Emily Peck says, for example, the bank's undoing had everything to do with the G in the acronym, that is, governance, or how a business manages itself. SVB's risk management procedures, a key component of the G, clearly didn't function or function well. The bank was even without a chief risk officer for several months last year. But when asked by lawmakers in the House yesterday, Michael Barr, the Fed's top banking regulator, and FDIC chair Marty Gruenberg both rejected the idea that ESG played a role in SVB's failure. Still, it's doubtful that governance was on anyone's mind. Most corporate failures, whether Enron or Lehman Brothers or now Silicon Valley, were in fact governance failures. So says Paul Washington. One of our mantras here is don't forget the G, he said. Silicon Valley Bank seemed to understand that risk management was a part of the G. Vivek Ramaswamy, the author of the book Woke Incorporated, said ESG critics, and there have been many lately, are far less focused on governance. Good governance, I have no issue with. But including it in ESG, actually, he said, prevents good governance because firms are more likely to focus on social and environmental issues instead of what could be viewed as the boring governance work. Well, and that's appeared to what happened with SVB, he said, clarifying he doesn't think ESG is why the bank collapsed. Now, the term ESG stems from a 2004 UN report, which said that focusing on these non-financial areas would be beneficial to the public and to the companies themselves. That's partly because the environmental and social justice issues are more or less relevant, depending on your perspective and depending on the company and industry. For an example, an oil company may face big E, environmental issues, while a media company, not so much. But governance, particularly self-governance, I'm not talking about government regulation, it's companies' management and oversight is always important. Now, after a long snooze, money's on the move. Kind of alluded to this last week, and it's a big deal. Likely means banks are going to have to start paying more to keep your cash in their accounts. Surge of cash into money market mutual funds and treasuries in recent weeks, and gold, along with an outflow of deposits from smaller regional banks, all highlight the sudden behavioral shift of corporate and consumer depositors. The shift, of course, can be traced to the recent bank crisis, which suddenly made the safety of deposits a significant issue for millions of us who previously hadn't thought much about the possibility of bank failures, at least since the Great Recession 15 years ago. Now, that's changed, and depositors have noticed that some money market funds are paying nearly 5% for cash. Joe Abate at the Too Big to Fail Barclays wrote, "The recent turmoil regarding deposit safety may have awakened sleepy depositors and started what we believe will be the second wave of deposit departures, with more balances moving into money market funds." Bottom line, he added, "We expect banks to compete more aggressively for deposits. In other words, pay more for them." Talk a lot about the residential housing market on this program, but stress is growing in the commercial property market, too, as we recently talked about. Everyone is watching commercial property these days, given how reliant it is on some of the same regional banks have been under pressure since the collapse of SVB. One indicator of this comes from the market for bonds built out of commercial mortgages known as commercial mortgage-backed securities, CMBS for short. Here's basically how it works. Prices for CMBS, some of which are backed by office buildings that, by the way, are much emptier now than they used to be, have plunged recently as investors have started to see them as, well, rightly so, riskier bets. And that pushes up CMBS yields. Remember, yields move in the opposite direction of their price. Well, as those yields rose, the difference between those and yields on super safe government bonds has surged. The difference is sometimes referred to as the risk premium, or more commonly, the spread. When spreads go up, traders usually say widen or blowout. It means trading activity is declining, credit's harder to come by, and more expensive, too. And the flow of capital through the economy, or in this case, commercial property sector, is really starting to slow. Now, when spreads go really nuts, as they did early in the pandemic and during the Great Recession, it's the equivalent of a financial heart attack. Sometimes they call it a credit crunch when capital stops flowing. Whatever you call it, the economy suffers. These spreads are telling us that worries about the commercial property market are getting more serious. We believe there are risks of a credit crunch developing and spreads widening further. That's economics. Now, next, Texas was home to six of the top largest growing counties population-wise last year. According to the Census Bureau, out this morning with new data, largest gainer, ironic in some ways, given it being in the news for so long over the 2020 election results, Maricopa County, Arizona, which encompasses the sprawling metropolis of Phoenix. The other three entries on the top 10 growth counties lists, numerically, not percentage growth, were in Florida, Polk, Lee, and Hillsborough counties. America's shift in money, people, and power to the Sun Belt, propelled by the pandemic, is continuing even as the pandemic eases. After the Phoenix area, the second biggest gainer was Harris County, Texas, home of Houston. What's Houston? Is Houston the third, I believe, or is it the third or fourth largest city in the nation? And Collin County, Texas, a northern suburb of Dallas, ranked third in numeric population rise. The two largest counties in numerical decline were L.A. County and Cook County, where Chicago is. But those also remain the most populous U.S. counties, followed by Harris County, Texas, Houston. Okay, so Houston's the third. Two megatrends from a Wall Street Journal analysis of the data first. Big cities lost fewer residents last year as more immigrants moved in. Evident in Manhattan, Seattle, Dallas, and Miami-Dade and Broward County in Florida. And second, the suburbs of big cities and small and medium-sized metropolitan areas continued to claim much of the country's growth. One fun fact, Manhattan, which had a population decline of over 98,000 in 2021, rebounded by over 17,400 a year later. Now listen to this. Thousands of Chinese migrants and asylum seekers have arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border in recent months, and many more are reportedly heading north after passing through the treacherous Darien Gap jungle between Colombia and Panama. It's another example of people from well beyond the Americas seeking refuge in the U.S., through the southwest border, and reflects, in the case of the Chinese, the backlash to President Xi Jinping's harsh domestic policies. During the first 2 months of this year, nearly 2,200 known Chinese nationals crossed into Panama through the thick jungle. Well, that's according to migration data from Panama. That's more than 2,000. That's more than the 2,000 Chinese immigrants who made the trip in all of last year, which itself was a huge jump from the 77 counted in 2021. There's long been Chinese migration at our southern border going back to the 1980s, but the numbers have ticked up in recent months because of a variety of factors, not the least of which is the reopening of China's borders on the heels of Xi's zero COVID policy. Chinese nationals are granted asylum at a relatively high rate in the U.S. 58% of them get it, according to recent data. That's compared to an average of 10% for asylum seekers from the Northern Triangle, which includes Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. Hey, we talked about this the other day, AI, and how it's going to affect possibly up to 300 million jobs worldwide. Well, now an open letter calling for a 6-month pause in work on AI is dividing the tech industry. The division isn't just between AI boosters and skeptics, but also between different factions of these critics. The letter, initially signed by Elon Musk and Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak and other industry luminaries, urged stepping back from the dangerous race to ever larger, unpredictable black box models with emergent capabilities. Specifically, the letter said that AI labs should immediately pause for at least 6 months the training of AI systems more powerful than GPT-4, which is the latest version of OpenAI's large language model that was released just 2 weeks ago. Tech World is also said to be abuzz over the letter, but few expect to see either a voluntary industry slowdown or a government-mandated pause. There are no literal proposals in the actual moratorium. It's according to Box CEO Aaron Levy, who told Axios's Ina Fried on stage yesterday at Axios's What's Next Summit. It was just, well, let's now spend the time to get together and work on this issue. But it was signed by people that have been working on the issue for over the past decade. Not sure what this means or where or what it will do, but anytime the big boys weigh in on a weighty issue like AI, regardless of their motives, we should be using it as an opportunity to think about how we're going to protect ourselves and our jobs from AI's eventual ubiquitous presence. And last today, and I always get pleasure talking about this, and I'm sorry if it's not relevant to your life, but for the first time since 1968, all 30 Major League Baseball clubs are playing today, opening day, the new season, with the first of the 15 games having begun at 1:05 Eastern time. Fans and players, however, are about to experience a season unlike any other. MLB is implementing four major rule changes in an effort to decrease the length of games and increase the action for fans. First, there's a new pitch clock. Oh, hi, Alexis. First, a pitch clock. There will be a 30-second timer between batters and 15 to 20 seconds between pitches, depending on whether the bases are empty. This has done a superior job so far in speeding up games during this year's spring training games. Next, restrictions. This is my own personal favorite rule change. In an attempt to increase the batting average of balls in play, defenses must have a minimum of four players on the infield dirt, with at least two on either side of second base. I love this change. For purist baseball defenses, have a first baseman, a second baseman, a shortstop, and a third baseman, of course, in addition to a pitcher and catcher. I can't tell you how many times I've been frustrated by seeing three and sometimes four infielders set up in the same side of the field, or seeing a second baseman, you know, halfway out in the right field grass, robbing hitters of what otherwise should have been legitimate hits. And then last, there are limited pickoffs permitted. Pitchers may only disengage from the rubber twice per batter, with a runner on base. Hey, there's also bigger bases, too. 15-inch base has been replaced with 18-inchers, making it a little bit easier to steal second. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'm heading to the TV to watch some opening day action. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly blog in your email inboxes. Thanks as always to our engineer Todd and for you turning into financial survivors. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet.